On today's College Football Inquirer, college football coaches want a 24-team playoff. Do they care how many games are in the playoff? Probably not. They have other reasons, and we will explain. Plus, Ross's Congressional Minute, and if there were a 2014 playoff, how would that affect various programs? How would the last 2 years have been different if it had been 24 instead of 12? We'll talk about it all on today's College Football Inquirer. This is College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples, and Ross Dellinger, you had another story this week. Another domino has fallen in the road to a larger playoff, and the size of said larger playoff seems to be coming into focus because the American Football Coaches Association members voted for a 2014 playoff. Now, we've talked about everybody getting behind the idea of 24, except Greg Sankey and the SEC. But we need to explain why. Like, why do these guys want this now? Because typically coaches' interests don't always align with the ADs or with the presidents, but it seems like everybody's sort of falling into line here.
Yeah, and Andy, I think you wrote about it today at On3, is the reason behind this move is more so sure, it's access, more access, and coaches want more access, of course, because they want a chance to get in the playoff with three or four losses if they can. But really, it is the calendar, and it's moving up the playoff basically by a week, if not 2 weeks, if they could, in having a little more sort of set calendar that finishes the season earlier. So that's sort of the goal, and I think there's a few ways they want to do that. One, and get rid of, to me, actually, the bigger news from the coaches was this group of coaches all saying, get rid of the conference championship games, right? And so that saves a week. You have a week vacant there. And then another week they want to save is they want one bye week during the regular season, not two. When the season starts on week zero, like it will in 2027.
Because the NFL's moving to
Labor Day. Bye weeks. Yeah, you have two bye weeks. So they want one that would actually shift up the season 2 weeks. Now, I don't necessarily expect that one to happen, but the conference championship game debate obviously is happening on every level, and it's pretty clear, and it has been clear really for like 2 or 3 years. The first story I wrote on this was 3 years ago that inevitably the conference championship games will be going away, and so anyway, back to your question, Andy. Right, it's all about shifting up the playoff and having the playoff end earlier.
Yeah, it's also about job security or their perception of job security, because I told the story in the column. I had a college basketball coach with a straight face tell me that he thought the men's basketball tournament should expand to 128 teams. wait for the punchline.
Sorry.
In 2006. So these guys all think if you expand the postseason, it will help them keep their jobs. They don't understand that expectations run on a sliding scale. If anybody doesn't believe that, ask Kalen DeBoer, who just won a road playoff game and has his fan base up his you-know-what. So that's the piece of it. But the calendar piece is the really probably more interesting, more important piece. The conference championship game is a very interesting piece because it actually may be the bigger part of all this argument between the SEC and everybody else now. And remember, it is the SEC versus everybody else, and it's not necessarily the entire SEC versus everybody else. It is Greg Sankey, the commissioner, some presidents in the SEC. But I would venture to say if we polled the SEC coaches, 16 of the 16 would say, we're good with what the AFCA voted on. That's why we voted for it.
Yeah, this is ultimately about job security. I have a ton of questions. Let me start off by saying this. Normally, when there's a vote to suggest to a committee, to explore, to suggest to a congressional committee,
to recommend,
to explore,
to form a working group, to form a blue ribbon panel.
Normally, I just whine like a scalded dog before we go on the air about why, like, no one cares and everyone's brain is just completely mush at this point because of the perpetual state of upheaval in the sport. I don't feel this way. I think this is significant on a number of levels. But before we get to the significance of it, I really want to hammer home, if you are surprised by this, that the coaches are in favor of the 2014 playoff, wouldn't you vote for something? Wouldn't you advocate for something that kept you from getting fired from your job? It is that simple. I want to talk about, there's two coaches I thought about this morning, Andy. Shane Beamer at South Carolina, Brett Bielema at Illinois. So not this past playoff cycle, the one previous. Those two teams in a 2014 format would have made it. I want to just think for a second.
I think Brett would have made it this year, too.
It made noise, too.
Yeah. So think for a second what postseason college football playoff inclusion would do for a program like South Carolina, for a program like Illinois. Yep. Okay? Think for a second what it would do for those coaches in the trajectory of their careers, respectively. Everything that Brett's gone through, kind of getting his rear end handed to him in the SEC, kind of reworking his career and going back to the Big Ten. Think about the trajectory. Just think about how we're all sort of SEC people here. We are all sort of educated and trained in the SEC in terms of coverage of the sport. Think about how hard it is at South Carolina, how the deck is stacked. Think about the lifeblood it gives you.
They played football for 100 years before they even won a bowl game.
Yes.
I was at the bowl game.
Did they win?
They did. They beat West Virginia.
What? Where was it? Tampa?
It was the Carquest Bowl, Joe Robinson Stadium.
Okay. Florida man, through and through. I love it. I can tell you the existential psychology of Volunteer Nation has calmed somewhat the way a heavily medicated person is, a somewhat calm. After simply being able to reckon with themselves in this current sort of era under Danny White by saying, we made the college football playoff. So from a coach's standpoint, before we get into the money and the logistics and everything else, this brutal carousel would lessen its impact at least a little bit, in my opinion. Now, that's a double-edged sword for a couple years. Now, that's a double-edged sword because really, guys, we're talking about ultimately maybe 12 programs in the nation where making the playoff won't be good enough, right? If you're Texas right now, making the playoff is not good enough with Arch, with the expectations. Sark's got to be in the Final Four. Sark's got to be in the national title game, right?
I think James Franklin's an instructive one here because
definitely
he's blocked from the 4-team playoff by Ohio State and Michigan over and over and over again. They have a 12-team playoff. He gets in. He wins two games. They have the ball with a chance to go to the national championship game. He starts 3-3 the next year and gets fired. Like, that's the example of once the expectations slide, you're still not safe. You still have to meet the expectations.
Yes, Ross, I want to pivot back a little bit to the mindset that's in that room and the significance there. The coaches voting for this. So often we'll have to talk about something that's been made public on a surface level, and then you kind of have to take me at my word, or you take Andy or yourself at your word when we say stuff like, you know, the coaches actually hate this. Like, a lot of fans are bemoaning, like, we don't have spring games anymore. Hey, the coaches hate spring games. Okay, they just do. They're not going to tell you that, but they do. What I found really interesting, Ross, is that this is a direct indictment of conference championship weekend. Coaches do not care. They don't want this. And this is about as public a statement as they could have made against the format.
Right. And I think the SEC commissioner probably would react to this and say to his coaches, well, you know, if we get rid of the championship game, how would you like to lose about $5 million from your budget? Right, because
they'd say you're going to get more money from adding teams to the playoffs. So there you go.
Hopefully, that's the hope. Yes, that's the hope, is that they will make up that $80 to $100 million. That is certainly the hope there. But you know, I want to be clear too. For those that don't understand how this all rulemaking works, right? Like, there's two people that decide if the format changes or not. Not the coaches, right? Not the other commissioners, not whoever else. It's Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti. It's the Big Ten and SEC. They have to agree. And so right now, they meet again in person, all the commissioners, in the middle of June, I believe, in Denver. And so they'll get a presentation then of evaluation of a 2014 playoff. They'll get a presentation. Then we get Denver. Yeah.
No, it's just an odd. Denver, I mean,
Ritz-Carlton, I believe. This is the annual Conference Commissioners Association meeting, which is all D1 commissioners. They meet in a side room. They sort of the CFP gathers in
an Beats elegant
as well.
Side room. Here's the one thing I want to point out about coaches and because a lot of times coaches don't get listened to by their ADs and presidents. Yeah, I've been to enough SEC spring meetings in Destin and ACC and Amelia Island and all that. So the coaches come out of their meeting like, we want this and this and this and this and this. And then the ADs and the presidents are like, I know. Last year was different and was interesting and instructive because in the SEC, they went into the meeting and the athletic directors were kind of behind the Big Ten idea of automatic bids.
At least 12 to 13 of the 16, I think.
Yes. Yes. And so they were behind it. And then the coaches are like, what the hell is this? You got to do at-larges, all at-larges. Why don't you just right. do best 16? I remember Lane Kiffin saying that. And the whole mood changed. And it was the first time I'd seen where the coaches wanted something that the ADs and the presidents actually listened to them. So this will be an interesting one because Greg Sankey is facing pressure in multiple directions. His coaches clearly want 24. Multiples of his ADs have come out on the record and said they want to get rid of the conference championship game. Greg Sankey, as Ross pointed out, has a 100 million reasons to try to protect the conference championship game because the SEC makes more off its conference championship game than everybody else. There's no guarantee it would be made whole by the larger playoff. This is why Greg Sankey keeps saying, well, we have contracts. We have contracts. Okay, contracts can be amended.
Yeah. Give me a break.
But that is why he keeps saying that.
We have from the league that brought you coaching contracts gone amok. Yeah, we have contracts. Oh God. He has to say with a straight face is unbelievable sometimes. And then he begs for a sort of deference or credulity.
But it's interesting because I'm thinking back Roy Kramer, Mike Slive, Greg Sankey era. Mm-hmm. There have been very few times any of them have had to publicly about face on an issue.
Yes.
And he may have to do that. The one time I can think of in his tenure where things got a little out of whack and it was such a micro thing that I don't think greater college football even noticed, but it was the LSU Florida arguing over the Hurricane game.
Yeah, dude, I covered that. That was intense. Yes. Andy, do you want to do the quick one?
Jeremy Foley, the Florida AD, had already announced his retirement.
Yes.
Was leaving and did not care what anybody thought. He just played chicken.
The leakage in that story.
Was prepared for that.
The amount of back channeling to people like us from both of those two schools. I guess we need to set the table here. This would have been 2017 season or 16?
2016.
Yep. 16. Okay.
16, that's right.
10 years ago. There's a hurricane. It affects the scheduling of the LSU Florida game, which I believe was kind of early-ish in the season that year. I'm pulling this from memory.
It was in October, I think.
It was in October.
It was when A&M played Tennessee. Because I was in College Station that day, and it was all going down. Yeah.
This was, and I wrote about this at the time, and it was Andy's sort of like instruction to me on how, when I came in as a national reporter and how Slive operated, it was sort of this grandfather in public, and then kind of the iron fist, you will toe our party line behind closed doors. And it was really the first test of Greg Sankey, and he failed because the individual schools started acting like individual schools. LSU and Florida took their dirty laundry public. I mean, they leaked it to various people sympathetic different areas of the press. And it was kind of a failure of that SEC model to stand united. You know, we don't fight in public, right?
Right.
So this was a huge failure on Sankey's part at the time. I can't remember anything else that rivals this. And you guys can check me. As this story develops and sentiment has swung this offseason cycle towards the 24 model, other than the LSU Florida debacle, I can't ever remember a time where a leader of the Southeastern Conference or just a prominent figure in the Southeastern Conference has not only Andy had to about face, but really sort of been the vocal minority in an inevitable change in college football, at least in the last 20 or 30 years.
Slive was a really good consensus builder. And to this point, Greg Sankey has been a really good consensus builder. And I know we've talked about this a bunch on the show, but I cannot stress enough how strange it is to me. And you guys tell me if I'm crazy or not, that in January, Ross, when you and I were in Miami Beach in January, there were 10 commissioners who wanted a 16-team playoff and one who wanted a 24-team playoff. And we are sitting here 4 months later, and it is completely flipped.
It is. It's and that's why I think, you know, whenever I had that original story 3 weeks ago from the presidential committee meeting that included all the commissioners and the CFP leaders, when they took basically like a straw poll in the meeting, and all of a sudden the ACC Big 12 commissioners and the Notre Dame athletic director were suddenly on board with the 2014 playoff after just 3 months before that they had voted for 16. That's why it was so significant. And we're just seeing momentum come from that event now lead to the CFP meetings that happened a week after that, and then lead to this these coaches meetings now. So we're just seeing the sort of momentum grow for this. You know, one thing I want to go back to is the argument for more access because of the increase in investment that we're seeing around the country. And that seems to be like sort of the reason that a lot of people point to of we need more access, right? We need more access, even the NCAA basketball tournament, which could by the end of this week or next week be finalized, the expansion of it, is so because
76.
Hey, we're
hooray! 76 teams. Yes.
Hooray!
We're spending $30, $40 million on a football roster, $10 to $20 million on a basketball roster. We need more spots to get in the playoff. We need this investment to pay off in some way by having a chance in the postseason. And that's the big argument. But the question one of you guys asked earlier, how many schools in football, just talk about football, how many schools would be disappointed if they only made the playoff this year and didn't win a game? And that number is probably climbing as the investment climbs.
Yes.
Right? Which goes back to why they want more access.
Yeah, but that's impossible. Like you, if you string that out along along a long enough timeline, how's that for syntax?
Very good.
You will inevitably find the same problem. So let's say it's five this year that are spending $50 million. I just pulled that out of thin air. Okay. There's five schools spending $50 million on a roster. Well, there's only four spots in the semifinals. So already you're going to have somebody upset. Okay. So one of those schools wins a national title, two or three come close, one's on the outside. What do you think is going to happen the following offseason? Five more schools are going to try and get to $50 million as fast as possible. There's no way to satisfy the correlation between spending money and the yield in championships. This does not work in any sport. There's God, one champion
just
every year.
Give out more championships. I mean, professional wrestling, we need an intercontinental champion.
You know what? Honestly, that's kind of why we did that. Actually, I remember being in meetings where I'd be like, we need another belt. We invented one called the strap. We need it. Yeah, we had one that was the European championship. Okay, anyway, we'll talk about it later. But yes. You know, it's funny, Andy, slightly along those lines, we were going through this news yesterday, building today's show, and I thought, well, what if you could create component championships? And here's what I mean by that. Let's go back to soccer for a second, which I'm sure every college football fan listening to this is going to love. You're only going to have one national champion every year. And you're never going to be able to satisfy that demand that Ross is talking about as we increase money. I spent this, so therefore I deserve this. All right. Is there ever going to be a sort of premiership, La Liga kind of salve in winning your league? And here's what I'm saying. So we have the Champions League in soccer, which is about to wrap up early because of the World Cup. And then you have winning the premiership, right? You have winning the Bundesliga, which is the German league, winning La Liga, which is the Spanish league. I picked a team there last year and they suck because I'm a terrible sports fan. Go Valencia. So what I'm saying is there's a lot of people celebrating in the streets when they win the premiership. Stay with me. Ross, to your point, do you think we'll ever have a place in time where someone says, hey, we spent all this money on our roster, we won the Big Ten, and we leave it at that? Probably not, right?
Nope.
Okay. If you're Michigan or Ohio State.
Especially when you get rid of conference championship games. Now, do you only have a regular season champion with an asterisk next to it.
So there is no playoff structure in the individual soccer leagues, and people just win the table, which just means win in the standings. The problem, as I thought about this yesterday, is there's no way to do that definitively because in every soccer league, you play each other numerous amounts of times throughout the season. It's a 9-month season, right? But the problem is in the SEC, we have how many teams right now? 16, 18, 35?
16.
Thanks. 16, that'll work. We have a 9-game regular season. What inevitably is going to occur is if you put a lot of stock into a regular season table, if you will, you can't actually create a value prop out of a regular season champion because there's going to be a really good chance that two teams at the top of the standings didn't play each other.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
This goes yep. back to, I'm not offering solutions today. These are just observations. It goes back to the problem, Ross, of it could be 5-on-50 this year. It could be 10-on-50 the following year, and it could be 10-on-75. Yeah. And then it could be back 5 spending $100 million. You are never going to satisfy that demand. It's impossible. That's not how sports work.
Yep, that's right. You know, I think it's kind of a fun game. I was just, while you were talking, I was kind of making a list of the programs that I think the fan bases would be disappointed if they only made the playoff. I ended up coming out with exactly 10.
You're talking about for 26?
For 26. Now, okay. This sort of also like considers history, right? Like,
when's the last time they made the playoff?
Yeah, go ahead.
Georgia, Ohio State, Penn State.
Okay, that's LSU. Not on my list. Penn State's not on my list. Not this year.
Have
you seen their schedule?
Because I'm looking at considering historical stuff, and they missed it last year. So
okay,
and they have a new coach.
Texas.
Okay. Yeah. All those. Yep.
Okay. LSU.
Yeah, we got LSU. Yep. Texas A&M.
No, they're not on my list again. I would side with Andy.
Yeah. I would side with Andy, but. I think they have to go back and win.
That's true.
Yeah. Notre Dame is the big one.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are we up to?
Oh, yeah, Notre Dame. Right, that's in there. Yep.
All right, who did we not mention? Miami?
So this is a 12-team playoff, right, Ross?
I'm just doing it based on 12 teams. So
okay.
I actually threw in there, because of last year's reaction to them not making the playoff, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And I also threw in there...
That's fair.
A team that's spending perhaps more than anybody in Lubbock.
Texas Tech, yep.
And I was in and out on a university in Ann Arbor. I was in and out. I kind of was going back and forth on that one.
I got one that you haven't mentioned yet. It's a private school in a sunny, large location.
SMU?
Is dumping Miami. All their money.
USC?
I already said Miami. Oh, is USC.
Oh, Miami's on my list.
I was about to make another Okie joke about Lincoln Riley.
Yeah. Miami's down. I was going back and forth on USC too, but again, they haven't ever made it. So if they make it, that feels like a big win.
There are some check writers in Heritage Hall that are beyond impatient right now.
Yeah, I think USC's win or else or playoffs are bust. Between all of us, Oregon, guys.
TJ, yeah, Oregon was on my list. Oregon was on my original list. I'm sorry. Yeah. So my original list was Miami, Texas, Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, Ohio State, Oregon, LSU, Texas Tech, Notre Dame. That was my original list. Now, I would add Penn State.
I would add USC. I would add Texas A&M.
So now we're getting to 15 schools. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now we're getting to 15 schools for a playoff that's 12. Probably a good reason that
if we expanded it out, if we said... It's now a 2014 playoff. Who expects to make it every year? Now you're adding Florida. Now you're adding Ole Miss.
And by the way, there's a litany of Big 12 schools we haven't even mentioned that are going to be really offended that we haven't mentioned them. And I understand that.
BYU, Utah, TCU, yeah.
BYU,
Arizona
BYU,
State.
They
feel like they TCU, should make a 2014.
Yeah. Like, I mean, people are going to laugh. Houston feels Clemson, like they got a shot at it this year.
Clemson, Florida State. If you expand it out
to 24, you're going to get all that expectation
Louisville,
rising.
Defending sure. conference champion Duke, of course. Of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
Would they have made 24 last year?
That is a question for Ross, who knows the rules. I think so.
Were they 24th? I can't remember. Weren't they in the top 24?
I think they were.
But that's the thing. It's a sliding scale. Expectations are a sliding scale. Love is an open door, as we learned from Frozen. And you... Just have
nice.
To, yeah.
Not where I thought our references were going to go today.
Duke was not in the top 25.
I was just looking. Duke was not in the top 25. So no, they even winning the ACC, they would have not. They lost their bowl game, so I think that dropped them out of the final rankings.
No, I'm talking CFP rankings. That wasn't after the bowl games. So this is the final.
Gotcha. Yep.
We put to bed, why are the coaches advocating for this. It's self-preservation. That's it. So
and
that's,
and the calendar, which they're yeah. right. I think they're, oh, it's a they're little right Pollyanna to think the sure. season ends on January 1st. That's what they want. I think January 8th or whatever that Monday is probably more realistic. And that's fine. That works.
Can we get it? Can we get it off a Monday? If we're fixing everything like they, like this AFCA
well, if it's
recommendation.
On the 1st, it's not on Monday. If
no,
you're,
I know,
if
but you said
the 1st,
Monday the 8th.
Unless the 1st is a Monday.
I'm just saying, get the national title game off on Monday night. I think that might actually, where, that take might unify an entire nation of fans, regardless of conference affiliation, the media, everyone.
Where do you want to be?
Here's the crazy thing, though.
You
want to
put it on
January 1st
Saturday?
Is on a Monday.
On Saturday.
If January 1st is on a Monday, by the way, there is Monday Night Football that night.
But the championship game is not moving to New Year's Day.
I don't think
the semifinals, maybe.
I think
right?
they
They'll
want
move
multiple
up one
games
week.
On
that would be cool. Yeah, if it, yeah. I mean, yeah,
for sure.
I would love that. I mean, but
I mean,
I don't
that
think
would
it's
be
possible.
Cool. But I would imagine that the semifinals are, like, if they move it up at all, I would guess the semifinals
here,
would be a New Year's Day.
You know,
Day
if you just take Uncle Andy's idea, it's more of a compromise with Uncle Andy, but that's okay. Because, like, college football is better on campus. Bowls are stupid, except for the Rose Bowl.
And the Pop-Tarts Bowl.
And the Pop-Tarts Bowl. You should just make the national championship game the Rose Bowl every year, but that's probably not going to happen.
I'd be fine with that.
You should just have, if you're going to do 24, first round, second round, and quarterfinals on campus. Permanent semifinals are the Sugar Bowl and the Rose Bowl.
Fine with it.
They're on January 1st always.
Oh, man.
You can, yeah.
I just over my home city. Because we just took the Peach Bowl away and we took the SEC mm-hmm. Championship away.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Atlanta. But you can host
sort of
national title games.
My home city, too. Yeah, New Orleans, Sugar Bowl.
I thought Orlando he said Sugar was never, a permanent.
Orlando never said, had a shot, so I'm in the clear.
What did you say? You said Rose.
What
and
were
sugar?
The permanent semis you said? Sugar and what?
Rose.
Oh, it was Sugar. Oh,
wait,
I
thought Rose
that.
Was the national title.
No. That they're not going to go for that. They want to have their parade and whatever. So they want it all on January 1st. This way they get to play a game on January 1st that has meaning and they get to have their parade beforehand.
So Rose and Sugar and then rotate the national title site.
Yeah.
Fine.
Home field advantage means something more, a little more.
Yeah, I just still don't care. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying that to be flippant. I'm saying
No.
Introduce a format and we'll all follow suit. I love the idea of more on campus stuff. I've yet to see this Hoff level ice storm the day after tomorrow nonsense that everyone was warning against.
Bro, I was in Indiana Notre Dame that first year.
Yes, I was about to bring
cold.
That up. It was really cold.
Y'all all know.
Cold.
I'm going to say this on the show on the record. Y'all all know. Different people that were either representing bowls or influenced by bowls who put out a ridiculous amount of weather related disinformation
right,
when
yes.
the bowl team format was announced.
That ignored the idea of there's already a playoff system where they play games in perhaps
yes.
one of the coldest cities in America in January.
Right. No, even colder was the next day, Andy, was
Ohio State. Yeah.
That game was really, really cold. I mean, it was windy. The wind chill was like, I think the wind chill of that Ohio State game was like 18 or something.
Yeah,
like
I was so, at both and I felt colder in South Bend. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But
it was snowing.
Yeah. You guys know that there was like a late stage playoff game played in Montana in the FCS this year and no one died.
Shut
up about weather. God. Like they literally have to close the roads.
Godfrey, are you
roads.
Insinuating that people in charge of college football might lie to get what they want?
Of course not. All right. Where's my John
Speaking
Junker?
Speaking of people who lie to get what they want, when we come back, Ross has a congressional minute. We'll be right back.
Hey.
College Football Inquirer, and I am very excited. I am pulling up the timer app on my phone, and you know what that means.
Ooh, it's been
a
minute.
It is time for Ross Dellinger's Congressional Minute. And go.
I'm freshly back from a day-long visit yesterday at Capitol Hill, where lawmakers continue to toll away on the Congressional College Sports legislation. It's been a while, guys, since I gave an update, so here you go. The SCORE Act, authored by Republicans in a bill that mostly grants the NCAA's wishes of employment and eligibility and transfers and all that good stuff, is expected to hit the floor finally later this month. But are the votes there? This will likely be the sixth time we've heard that the act is on the way to the floor. It's failed to reach the actual floor the other five times because of vote issues. Perhaps the sixth time is the charm. As for negotiations in the Senate, Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell continue to talk and have for the last 2 months, meeting almost weekly for hours at a time to work on a Senate college sports bill. If they don't strike a deal by June, most feel like the issue is dead in Congress as midterm elections approach and bill passage stops. And how about those presidential committees that Godfrey loves so much? In Trump's executive order, what's going on all that? The six committees were scheduled for a third round of meetings this week. What will that result in? Well, we really don't know.
Pretty good.
I would say it has some off-season rust. I don't know if you're... I mean, I feel like
no,
we need to...
No, he took a deep breath beforehand, and if he doesn't take the deep breath, he hits it right on the button.
I'm just saying, it
felt like
off-season.
You counted the deep breath in my timing?
Yeah.
It sounded like when I hit the button, Ross. It's not. This is not the 40 at the combine. It doesn't start on your first movement.
All right.
Also, all right, this would qualify as your first movement.
Well, maybe.
I said diaphragm, by the way.
Let's get into... Okay, I do want to get into the various acts. The Cruz-Cantwell part is the interesting one to me, because if a bipartisan bill were to emerge from the Senate, I would think that would actually have a chance of passing. Now,
more significant, yes. Yeah. I think I've told a few people there's certainly a lot of interest in the administrative community of college athletics about what's going on up here. And I've told everybody, kind of ignore a lot of the stuff as distractions on the SCORE Act and even the EO and the committees. It's a lot of distraction of what is really going on, because everybody should be focused on the Senate negotiations. Because that is, Andy, if there is something that does come from those two people, that has more significance than probably anything we've seen in 7 years.
If it passes the Senate, here's why it's important. If it passes the Senate, it means it passed had the votes of the Republican majority in the Senate, but also had enough votes from the Democrats
to break a
filibuster, which means you have 60 votes, which means based on the percentages in the House, you're going to pass the House.
But yes. But I think that a few things are going on here. First of all, if they do come out with a bill by the end of maybe the month or by early June, Cantwell and Cruz, it's still got a lot of hurdles, but there's better odds in something happening.
It also would not be the full wish list granted that the SCORE Act is.
It would not, right? It would be a combination probably of Ted Cruz's original bill proposal, which was released about 2 or 3 years ago now, which is kind of like 70% of the SCORE Act. And then it'll be a combination of like Maria Cantwell's SAFE Act, which is the Democrat side, and it would be some compromise in between. So it would probably...
Which is how Congress used to work, everybody.
Used to work, yes. So it would probably have some of the NCAA's request, which we're addressing, which addresses limiting transfers, 5-year eligibility, NIL state preemption. And the big question is, what will it say about future athlete employment? And that's kind of been the hang up in the negotiations in the first place.
Because the Democrats probably are like, yeah, make them employees.
It's almost like
the Democrats are at least provide a path to where they could be employees eventually, when the Republican side, specifically Ted Cruz, wants an anti-employment clause in there where they can't ever be employees.
I would venture to guess that the anti-employment clause, or the Democrats saying they are employees, either one of those, probably a deal killer, probably a non-starter. So,
yes, yep, 100%. Okay. Yep.
Go ahead, guys.
What am I going to do? Copy and paste the last 7 times I've done this rant? It doesn't shock me that Cruz's side is trying to push for anti-employment status. It's funny, though. I got to figure out new and different ways to get to the same damn point every week. It is interesting that Ross, in the previous segment, brought up the angst associated with overpaying and overinflating rosters. Mm-hmm. In other words, I gave that hypothetical $50 million number.
People who can't control their own spending?
Yeah. It's shocking because I'm pretty sure that if you regulated an employment agreement, you could then work on a more tenable model long term for your employees. Or you could run around like an idiot and talk about how they're student athletes, and you could continue to completely stymie.
Cartman says it in South Park every time.
I don't know what you're talking about, Andy. You could continue to stymie this inevitable development. Inevitable, right?
Right.
And push this along, and then I mean, have
inevitable
the boosters.
If you want rules, but I go back to the godfather of this podcast, Dan Wetzel, who repeatedly has said, you don't have to change anything.
Andy, here you don't have there is no urgency here. The only urgency is that I am begging and requesting for the same individuals who are complaining about the out of control spending on paying athletes who for years dump money into facilities and coaching contracts and buyouts and a bunch of nonsense. Stop pissing on my leg and telling me it's raining. Okay?
Unsustainable again. It's unsustainable. No. You know when it's unsustainable? When people run out of money and stop doing the thing that they're doing.
When the rosters stop doubling. We've seen them double for like 4 years. So it can't be unsustainable. Now, will it keep on doubling? That'll be interesting to watch. I think most people would believe that it stops at the 50% mark or around that of an athletic department's revenue.
Why would you pick that number out of the air, Ross? Why?
Maybe because the NFL is that number.
Oh,
right?
Because there's already an example in multiple sports of
now, Andy,
where the line college, is for the owners.
College administrators will tell you it's already close to 50% if you factor in tuition and scholarship and fees and books.
I saw Matt Brown's extra points newsletter this morning with the earned revenues of some of these schools. Nope, not there yet.
Think about it. The average Power Five conference budget is, I don't know, upper hundreds, right? Upper 170, let's just say 160, 170 million.
It is.
Well, I mean, the overall athlete compensation would need to be around 80 to 90 million. And right now it's probably around what? 30.
So they're still getting a bargain, is what you're saying.
So yeah,
it's funny how
we need to double again and maybe again.
In 2 years, the team payroll has gone from a good NFL safety to a good NFL quarterback. But it's still, that's all it is. Like, you're not even paying for Patrick Mahomes yet, and you're getting a whole team. Congratulations, everybody. You're still getting a bargain.
I'm going to attempt to transition us because I thought there was a really fantastic piece written for AL.com by young Matt Stahl, who I really love as a young reporter because...
Do we have to call him young anymore?
He's young to me.
It's becoming
he's young to me.
Okay.
No, I'm a huge fan of this kid because he is an absolute kamikaze when it comes to those group setting interviews with like... coaches or officials, like I love the bravado on this young man. Anyways, he very ingeniously took that kind of platitude that we've heard for the last year, which is we need the government to intercede. We need the government, right? this is where my only favorite quote of Ronald Reagan is I'm here from the government, I'm here to help. So everyone in college
sports. The
nine
most terrifying words in the English language is what Ronald Reagan called that.
Yes. So we constantly hear about how the government needs to come in and fix college sports. So what Matt did was, and I believe Matt is from Kentucky, I believe, Matt looked at an industry that received what college sports is asking for, which is essentially a federal takeover, and that's horse racing. And I don't want to spoil the article. It's up at AL.com. It doesn't go so well. That's the spoiler. It turns out when the government, when the United States government is managing your industry or your product, it's not the most effortless process that yields the best results.
Yeah, it's almost as if people who don't know what they're doing get put in charge, or I don't know, like that horse racing one was tacked onto a COVID bill. And it's like they didn't put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah.
Be careful what you wish for.
The one of the first hearings I went to up here, I think it was during COVID, it was 2020. And I can't remember who the senator was, but they looked at, I think it was Jack Swarbrick was a witness and said, or Tony Petitti, one of them, I don't remember. And the senator said, you're asking us for help. Be careful. Yeah. And I think we're seeing now, and
I like that self-awareness.
Yeah, right. And there was a great story Matt wrote, and I didn't know any of that. right? It was enlightening in a lot of ways.
Now, a lot of the horse racing part of it is the varying rules about off-track betting, which don't necessarily affect this. But hey, I mean, given what we've talked about last week and a half, maybe a little bit.
One of the things that I think is a big difference sort of between what college administrators are asking for and what happened with horse racing is, you know, college administrators kind of want their cake and eat it too, right? Because they don't want the government involved. They just want antitrust protection.
Yeah, they just don't want to pay the athletes.
Right. In the horse racing, the government created this entity, right?
They also don't want to pay the athletes.
Sort of had oversight of all this. That is, although that's sort of in the SCORE Act, I can just tell you guys, like, in the negotiations between Cantwell and Cruz, there is not some government entity overseeing any of this, right? I don't think that is going to, I don't think that's going to happen.
There have been some proposed bills that would
Bilirakis's first version of basically the SCORE Act, that was in there. And that's been mostly removed out of there now. So I don't think there will be, like, in any of the real talk, legislative talk going on, I don't think there will be like a, we're going to replace the NCAA with this federal entity, like kind of like what happened in horse racing. Yeah. I don't think that will be a thing. But still, there's some similarities to draw from just any
congressional mandate that govern your sport.
It's just so weird that, like, you know, all of these people who are speaking up and begging for government management of the sport are usually conservative in their ideology, their origin, where they grew up culturally, and all they ever talk about is small government. It's so weird. I don't know what
that. Godfrey, let's not be disingenuous here.
What is the hang up there? I wonder if because it has to do with labor.
But Godfrey, okay, this is as political as I'm going to get.
Here we go.
Oh.
I baited him.
I used to be able to make fun of it. As some people know, I am a registered Republican. I would probably be considered, you know, very fiscally conservative, probably closer to center on social issues. Mm-hmm. But the small government Republican thing, I used to have fun poking at what I called scally commies, people who became you know, raving socialists when it came to these issues. Yeah. I can't do that anymore because in other parts of life, there have been some big government tendencies. Let's just leave it at that. So it's not nearly as much fun to make fun of that anymore. I'm just saying.
I'm having a great time. So welcome to the Libertarian Party. You can get your leather jacket and conspiracy theory at the door.
Yeah. We still like roads and stuff. Police departments.
I would love not look. I was just thinking about this ten seconds ago. I was like, I can't wait until we do a segment where we're like, I'm excited about this offense, or I really like.
Well,
this defense,
we can do this right now, guys. We can do it right now because the 2014 playoff, whether any of us wants it or not, I certainly I'm on record as saying I do not want it, but it feels like it's a train coming down the tracks. Let's imagine what the last couple of years had been like, would have been like, and what different programs, the situations they'd be in, if there had been a 24-team playoff instead of a 12-team. It gets really interesting. Talk about when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and let us imagine a world where there's already a 2014 playoff because it feels like the conference commissioners and coaches and most of the ADs are there already. We had this it bloomed on our group chat for the show, and we decided to bring it to the show. It is, what if there had been one of these the last couple of years? How different would the situation be? And Godfrey got into this a little bit in the first segment where you were talking about Shane Beamer. Shane Beamer may not be in as dire a position as he is now, because South Carolina at 9-3 in 2024 would have made a 2014 playoff.
Right.
Probably would have won a game in it, or at least would have been a 50-50 proposition to win a game in that. And does that change what things would, because obviously they would not have made one last year. If they had the same season they had last year,
right?
I think South Carolina people would still be upset about that, but would they still be as upset about it?
No, not at all. Like, I can only speak as a fan here because this we're really kind of mining the fan psychology. If you're South Carolina, you make the playoff. Let's say maybe they won a game in that 24 team format.
Yeah.
And then next year you miss it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I you know, the only team I've ever cheered for that's won anything are the Atlanta Braves. And like they won in 21. When they got bumped in the first round in 22, oh well. When they got bumped in the first round in 23.
How about every year they won the NL West and didn't win the World Series in the 90s?
Andy, come on. God, jeez. Rest in peace, Ted Turner. We won, okay? We won in 95. So anyway, just threw me off my game. Wow. Absolutely.
Tom Glavin, Greg Maddux, John Smoltz.
Dude, how unemployed would Tom Glavin be in this ABS era? Sorry, the show is now officially off the rails. I'm going to cut to the chase. You suggested the ultimate what if in this scenario.
Yes.
And it has nothing to do with the teams on the Mendoza line. It is, do we literally have a different national champion this year in Notre Dame? Mm.
Yes. Yes. Entirely. Because remember, if you did the advanced stats, power rating, use the metrics Vegas uses to set the line, Notre Dame would have been favored over almost every team that made the college football playoff on a neutral site. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a really good chance they would have won the thing.
I think
look at who ended up winning or the first year of the 12-team playoff. You had the fifth seed and the eighth seed play. Mm-hmm. Neither one of those teams would even have made the 14 playoff.
Yeah.
And then last year, we adjusted the seeding. Wouldn't have made either. Yeah, but still, in that, I don't think the seeding, I don't think Notre Dame.
No. I was just talking
Notre
about
Notre Dame would have been the top four, but yeah.
They,
but like in Miami they wouldn't have made.
Here's a darker one, a darker timeline one.
Ooh.
What happens with the Sharon Moore situation? Because Michigan's in a 2014 playoff last year. Now,
yeah, that's right.
If everything times out the same way, then she tells the Michigan administration while they are getting ready for a playoff game.
Does she then?
Right.
Based on what I read, this, I mean, she's fearing for her life. Let's not,
this
I don't want to
This is going to happen.
Prance around this. Yeah.
And so how would they have responded?
Yeah.
What would have happened? Because you could be firing a coach in the middle of a playoff run-up. Like, that would have been incredibly weird. But that's also something that would have been an issue.
I mean, we're talking about Michigan, the most honest and pure institution and fan base in the world. So I'm sure that they would have done the right thing no matter what and not rallied around a leadership figure and then lied and obfuscated for years to protect that person. I don't think that actually would have happened, Andy. I don't think that Sharon Moore had enough internal support.
Yeah, he would have been fired anyway. It just would have been
because what we're learning, I don't want to be glib about this. There's some seriously bad things that are coming out about this situation.
Well, you can be glib with the idea of a Biff Poggi coached playoff game because that would have happened.
Yes, but let me be clear. Really horrible stuff still unfolding. We'll talk about it as it probably shows up in court. And then also Michigan's awareness. We're not sure who knew what at Michigan when, but I don't know, Andy, if it would have been enough just because I don't think he had as much internal support as a Harbaugh did barreling towards that first national title in decades.
Well, also,
where
the things Harbaugh was accused of, not the same.
Totally different. Yes. Yeah. So I think they still might have clipped him, maybe.
I think they probably would have. I think if that had all timed out the same way, they still would have fired him.
And then you're right.
Biff Poggi coaching in the playoff.
Yeah. And then guess what? Might have won. you never know. Like, might have had to deal with this through the second or third round.
Or the week after, because she came forward, basically the week after the season ended.
It was like December 10th, I want to say. The firing happened on December 10th or December 11th.
Yeah, so about a week and a half or so after. Or does she wait until a week after the playoff
game?
Because
that first game is probably already
mid-December, December 20th,
yeah.
21st, something like that. So it'd been like 10 more days, you know.
Yeah. There's a Lane Kiffin question to ask because Ole Miss would have made the playoff in 24.
Mm-hmm.
Would that have given him enough vault to take another job if he still wanted to?
Or would it have changed his math? Right. Yeah. On leaving for LSU, because What it, I mean, okay, that Ole Miss team that missed the playoff was incredibly talented. It was capable of beating anybody in the 2014 in the 2024 playoff. Yes. What if he got to the semis or got to the final?
Mm-hmm.
Does he even leave for LSU? Would he be like, nah, I'm good here?
I think that God knows we're going to spill enough ink, so metaphorically, on this Kiffin decision as we approach week three of the 26 season. But I think it's the last of its kind. One, he's so singular, and God knows I hate heaping words like that on him. But like, he's obviously a very different personality and very self-obsessed and all that. But I think the paradigm that Kiffin and CAA and Sexton presented of the value judgment between those two schools, that might not exist in a 24-team reality, so long as both schools are committed to NIL and Rev the way that those two institutions in Mississippi and Louisiana are. So I think it's that moment, I think, is going to stand alone in college football history, especially if we have 24 teams.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, and USC's probably not in the situation.
Oh, they're fine.
Because they
I think they're fine,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're good. I think, you know, it's funny. I'll flip it around. Even in a 24-team playoff, think about how much more precipitous the fall would have looked for Penn State this year.
Well, but here's my question with that one. They fired him when they hit 3-3. So right. They fired him after the Northwestern game. I don't know that you pull the trigger on 3-3 because he can still make the playoff by winning out.
Yes, but that's a 3-3 team that hadn't played like Ohio State yet. That's a 3-3 team that hadn't played. There were a couple.
I don't think you fire him then. I think you
Brian Kelly was the same way, right? You know, he was fired after a third loss because you're eliminated from a 12 team, but definitely not eliminated from a 24 team. I mean, last year, I think one 4-loss team would have made it. Iowa would have made it into the 2014 playoff.
Think about Clark Lee and Vanderbilt, because you just mentioned LSU, Ross, and I was standing outside the LSU locker room after that loss in Nashville here this past season, and you know, think about the equity that a program like Vanderbilt has sought for so long. I mean, you would essentially be sort of certified. It's a different track. Like, I'm not trying to talk down to Vanderbilt, for instance, or any school that's in a similar situation, but if they had made the playoff, what you're doing is essentially endorsing the Clark Lee model, which I think we all still are to some degree, but you're endorsing it for a decade. That guy's basically in statue territory.
Yeah.
If he'd have made the playoff. Yeah.
And the thing about that is it's a very hard job. Diego Pavi is gone. Yeah. Like, they can go 7-5, 6-6 this year. And it's still a really good job for Vanderbilt. Still a really good season for Vanderbilt. But after 10-2, it doesn't feel the same. And and the 10-2 doesn't have the imprimatur of you made the playoff. So,
yes. I brought this up to an agent just casually over text, and I was kind of thinking like, you guys are going to go extinct, man. Like, you know, because agents live on churn, right? Like, live on the never mourn for an agent whose client just got fired, because a good agent has another client up for that job, and his fired coach is going to get paid.
Yeah, everybody's going to get it on the back end, right? The worst thing for agents is coach is very happy at job and is performing well.
Inertia.
Well, just like
inertia.
2 years ago, right? Remember there was 5 power conference coaches fired, maybe, or turned over? That was it. It was like a low for like 20 years, and
this
wasn't
is where
great for agents.
I remind America that North Carolina could have hired John Summerall, but they went with Bill Belichick. All right. So I was texting with his agent. I should set that to more of an actual melody. I apologize. And I said, like, hey, you guys are going to be out of business, da 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 da. And he just texted me an article on the firing of Jamal Mosley, who's the Orlando Magic head coach. And I think what the sort of response was meant to be was, give it enough time and standards will change. So for those of you, and I'm not an NBA person, like, I mean, go Hawks.
Well,
I
can set the table as someone who grew up a Magic fan.
Explain this.
The Magic were up 3-2, playing game 6 in Orlando, were up 22 points at halftime on the 1-seed Pistons, and then scored a total of 18 points in the entire second half and lost. And then they went and lost game 7, and then Jamal Mosley got fired because they didn't make a single adjustment.
They had a 3-1 lead, Andy.
They had a 3-1 lead, but they were up 3-2 when they had a 22-point halftime lead. Like, the game was over. Like I turned it off. I was like, well, they're good.
Wow. Okay. So the reason I was using Mosley was actually less of the circumstances of their first round series against the Pistons and more the fact that they were one and done in the playoffs, I believe, 3 years in a row.
And they're
first
better
round
than that.
Out. First round out. Right.
Yeah.
So standards will change. Mm-hmm. Now, it feels hyperbolic and silly to say that one day we're really picking on the Cox today. South Carolina is going to suddenly say, you know what? You made the playoff 2 years in a row, but that's not good enough anymore. But that potentially, again,
that's
we
exactly
talk about
what'll happen. Yeah.
Capitalism and demand expand in perpetuity. It's like the universe is always getting bigger. The same thing's going to happen in college sports. So one day, the standard at South Carolina might be you haven't won enough. And case in point, I'm not going to say this officially on our show. There are going to be some people who are very, very, very upset if Tennessee doesn't get back to the playoff this year, right? Ross, you mentioned this.
Mm-hmm.
What about, hey, what about if Pete Golding has a dry spell for 2 or 3 years? Mm-hmm. That was a Final Four team.
Or Tennessee, like, what if Tennessee misses a 2014 playoff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's fired then. Yeah.
Yeah. It's trouble.
Yeah. So, it's all a sliding scale. It probably does, like at certain programs, I think you're right, Godfrey. At certain programs, it probably does protect the person who's in the job now, which is why you would vote for such a thing, because you're the person in the job now. But at certain programs, it does not matter for Kalen DeBoer. It doesn't matter for Ryan Day. It doesn't matter for Kirby Smart. It really doesn't matter for Lane Kiffin at LSU. You just got to make it. You better win.
Yep. And we talk a lot about the move for more access and expansion because of the investment, but a lot of the commissioners and administrators, ADs, also believe that I don't think they're thinking about it like we are as far as the standards will change. I think they see it as the pressure on the system. Right, we won't be as pressurized if we expand the playoff, when we all know that eventually the standard is going to change and it'll be just as much pressure.
Of course.
But maybe it takes a few years, but you would think it'll get there.
I like the pressure on the system. Like the fact that a team that might have been able to win the whole thing got left out this year made the final decision very dramatic, made the final 2 weeks of the season very dramatic. That's drama that goes away in a 24. And I know what you're going to say. There's always a bubble. And you're right. There is always a bubble. But the 24-25 team right now, in the way the sport is set up, doesn't have a chance to win the national title. Now, this is what my co-host at On3, Ari, always says. If the sport gets to a point where it's flattened enough that Team 24 actually can make some waves in the playoff and go really deep, then absolutely make it a 2014. But you don't know that yet.
Because it's headed that way. Can I say something positive since I'm the resident curmudgeon? I think everything that came out of this AFCA thing is ultimately a net positive for the support.
I don't want 24. I actually think 12 is a great number.
I think 16 is ideal. But if we're going to go this direction and it kills, I'm not in love with 24. I'm okay with it, Andy. But we're talking about killing conference championship weekend, which is totally arbitrary. We're talking about, and this is where I'm just going to be
totally
as naive
arbitrary
as possible.
Now that they're huge conferences. Yes, you're right.
I'm going to be naive as possible here and say 24 opens the door for more participation from the group of schools. Okay. Again, I'm being naive. But it shortens down the overall calendar, which I really felt like this isn't like a sports writer's lament or anything. But I really felt like it was just too damn long this past season. I think this provides a decent bulwark against the inevitable NFL expansion because you're going to have a good postseason going
and
for longer.
Putting more on the front end is less competition with the NFL. You're keeping the window the same. The season window is the same. It's just more sensible.
I'm okay with all this. I really... Ross, can I go back and just ask a follow-up? This is like the correction segment of the show as we wrap up. One buy versus two buys, Ross. Mm-hmm. Why did the coaches go the way they did? I didn't quite understand that.
Try to get back a week. Okay. Like move everything up. Yeah. I mean, the thought is that you could shift the whole season up a week and even get back not just championship week, but get back a second week to move everything up. Now, if you were to do that It would either give you more space between the regular season and the, when the playoffs start, or if you just want to go week after week, you could play the national championship game on January 1.
Which
it's interesting.
Probably won't happen.
Yeah. Yes. So to close, it's really interesting because over the years, this has been one of those things where the coaches are somewhat split, where most coaches I talk to over the years want sort of football to be in session for as long as possible because it creates a certain rigidity and a schedule and a reliance for the 18 to 23 year olds to be in routine. But what you're actually saying, Ross, is kind of counter to that. They would rather just have it more compact, which I can understand both sides here. I think it's also because coaches want to deal with less of a headache in that January, March schedule.
Yes. Coaches want a one semester sport. They also don't want to be working on game planning or anything else while they're working on free agency. And let's be real here. They're all working on free agency throughout December, even though the portal doesn't open until January. So
definitely. That's called tampering.
And everybody does it except the service academies, but that's okay. All right, gentlemen.
And the service academies could. You just got it. Look.
They'd have to start taking transfers.
Come drive a tank.
Yeah. Mm. They'd have to start taking transfers.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to do the plebe year as a junior. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Everybody, we will talk to you on Tuesday.